This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, this is Jeff Russo. I'm the composer from Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Exciting and new, beam aboard, we've commissioned you, and space, the final frontier, black alert, there's a spore drive here, the space boat. Soon we'll be leaving from Starbase One. The space boat. Make sure your phaser is set to stun. Set a course for New Eden. The Red Angel lights the way. And space won't hurt anymore. Just as long as you stop the Klingon war, it's space. Welcome aboard, it's space.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the Love Boat. Oh, wait, no, sorry, Star Trek Discovery. I'm your co-host, Liam Smart. Joining me today is Nick Collinson. How are you, Nick?
Pretty good. Had a few technical difficulties coming in here, but everything is working now.
So a bit works out for the rest of the show.
Yes.
We had a bit of a mic issue in the last episode, so we are sorry about that, but fingers crossed this one works out okay. And also with us today is the wonderful Brandy Dracula. How are you, Dracula?
Ready to suck your blood.
Trek FM's new songstress. You did a wonderful job on that, Brandy.
Oh, thank you. It was actually, I felt like the vocals were actually lacking, but by the time, I'd done it so many times that by the time I got to that version, I'm like, it's good enough. It's good enough. It's just a parody. It's good enough.
You find yourself singing it. In the car, I'm like, space boat, in the car.
Oh,
I'm
like, oh, it was stuck in my head. It was stuck in my head for several days after that I finally got the recording down. So, yeah, it does stick in the head. And the thing is that it was like in Jack Jones's voice in my head. He was singing my lyrics in his voice. I'm like, yeah, too bad he couldn't have done it better for me.
It's a shame we don't get paid so we could hire him, hey, and do it.
I actually, I'm not entirely sure he's still around.
Oh, is he dead? Oh,
if he is. I have no idea. I hope not, because he's a legend, but I can't say for sure. Now I have to actually look it up, because if I don't find this out, then,
it says present. No, he's still alive. Is this him?
Oh, he is. Yeah, okay, he's still alive. There's Jack. Yeah, I got to the same place at the same time you did. So yeah, Jack, hit me up and record my parody song. Oh, anyway.
So apparently alive celebrities are not the only thing we're going to be discussing today on the episode, nor is it going to be Brandy's singing voice, although it was probably the best thing that's going to come out of this episode. We're taking on...
Not true.
We're taking on part two of our Ships of Discovery series, seeing as we were originally going to be doing it over one episode, but there were way too many ships from Starfleet that we had to split it up into two episodes, didn't we, guys?
Yeah.
Yes. Because there are a lot, so many, especially if you start including things like the worker bees and, you know, other things like that. It becomes a much longer list than you think it's going to be.
Oh, my God. Are we doing the worker bees too? Oh, my gosh. I haven't got these on my list.
I'm just saying.
So, last week we did the Crossville class, Walker class, Nimitz class, which obviously are the Glenn, Shenzhou, Discovery, and Europa. But this week we're going to start with the McGee class.
Yeah.
So, excellent. Where did we see the McGee class, Nick? Our resident spaceboat expert.
Yeah. Well, so like a lot of the ships on this list, it was one of them, it was part of the Federation fleet that appeared at the Battle of the Binary Stars. In this case, you hear them reading off the names, and one of them is the USS Shran, which I loved because I love when Star Trek names, you know, ships and things after characters from previous shows in older timelines. So, of course, this is named after the Andorian general. Is it Thybek Shran? Mm-hmm. I think that's meant to be his full name.
Yeah, it's not his entirely full name, but it's...
He has that much longer Andorian name in the book verse.
It's long.
Yeah. So there was that ship. We get a better look of the McGee class of ship in The Trouble with Edwards, because, of course, the USS Cabot is the same class. It's this very small, sort of like compact, for me, makes perfect sense as a science ship. It's just sort of this small kind of compact thing. It's basically just the saucer with the two big, like, very thick nacelles, like, bisecting through the saucer itself.
Yeah, it kind of... This is not an insult because I love the design of the ship and I love the Shran.
Well, you were very excited about the Shran, weren't you?
Oh, yes, because Shran is like my favorite non-main cast character of Enterprise. And whenever he showed up, it was just, yes, I get Shran! So having a ship named after him, it kind of really... Now that I have a model of it, which I have now suspended from the ceiling in the living room, I found out command hooks and wire do work. So the bigger ships are going to take a couple of command hooks, but yeah, it does work. Dave was afraid it would fall down, but it has been a week and it has not fallen down. So now I can proceed with other ships, but it looks like it's flying through the sky. Like I'm not putting everything like right side up. So he's kind of tilted on his side, and I'm like, wow, that kind of just looks like a cookie with nacelles.
A cookie with nacelles. Yeah, tasty.
It's got this, I know, it's delicious. But I just, seeing the model and being able to look at it closely and touch it and turn it over and see all sides of it, it made me appreciate it even more. Mm. So, of course, there are people who will say, but you're supposed to keep the nacelles away from the saucer section. What happened to that? Well, maybe better shielding happened to that. I don't know. I don't care. I'd love
it. Well, to me, the Shran and the Cabot, which is, you know, the wider McGee class, it looks to me the cleanest out of all the ships that we've seen in Discovery. It's not so angry looking, if you know what I mean by
it's
that.
Friendly.
It's a friendly looking ship.
Yeah, like a lot of...
Which is, it's funny that...
No, sorry, I was going to say, like a lot of them, like the ones that we'll talk about soon, especially the Cardenas class, which is next on the list, it's kind of got like decals on it, and like the Shenzhou had sort of like the red stripes and stuff, which like, they look really cool, but yeah, they're kind of a little bit, yeah, maybe almost angry. They do look a bit more aggressive than Starfleet ships usually do.
Mm. To me, the McGee class is more like the chess club captain. Whereas something like the Cardenas class is a jock.
Yeah, That makes sense.
I feel like if Shrand were still around, he would just be kind of like, you made me named after a friendly ship, a cute ship. I am not friendly or cute. I feel like he would probably be insulted.
You made me a ship that looks like a cookie?
Yeah.
Hey,
this looks like a flying cookie.
I mean, what I think would have been appreciative of maybe is putting some a little blue embellishments, you know, like how the Shenzhou has red.
Yeah.
Just sort of to really be like, this is the Shran. This is named after one of the greatest Andorians.
Although we do know from Children of Mars, like it's a class of ship with staying power. Yeah, they're still around, you know, 150 years later.
But that ship could have been mothballed now, as we know, based on what's happened from Picard.
Yeah, there was. So we're recording this just after episode 3 of Picard as well, and there was that great line in there where they're in the beginning where they're trying to like figure out how they can still maintain their Romulan rescue, and he says, "Oh, we could bring up mothballed ships."
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They were retrofitting a lot of the ships because it takes more time to build a whole new ship than it takes to retrofit an existing item. So that it would make sense that they would, in this rescue attempt, needing all the ships that they could get their hands on, you know, recommission some things, bring them out of storage and retrofit them so that they could be used for this rescue.
Yeah.
Mm. Obviously, we've had the USS Shran and the USS Cabot. Shran is obviously named after Shran. But what do you reckon the Cabot's named after?
I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
Because I guess in my head canon, it's named after deck oil paints, because that's the only thing I can think of. Cabot is a brand of deck oil in Australia.
I don't know.
that's it. So it's the deck oil ship and Shran.
Yeah.
the only connection I can make in my brain, and I know it's not that, is that I just think of Jessica Cabot from Murder, She Wrote. That's not it. Definitely not it. Nobody's naming it after a fictional character in 80s television. No. So.
No, probably not. Or deck oil, but, you know, headcanon can be anything we want it to be.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was Jessica Fletcher. She lived in Cabot Cove. Ugh. I'm glad I realized that before we get tons of angry emails.
So the McGee class is named after John McGee Jr., who was a pilot in the Canadian Air Force who died in the UK just in his 10th week of service at age 19.
Oh.
So he's a young guy. But I think he is more famous because he wrote a poem or a sonnet called High Flight.
Oh.
Which I would recommend looking up because it's actually quite a nice little poem. I won't read it here because I don't think it's necessary unless you really want me to. I recommend looking it up.
Cool. Yeah, all right.
Nice.
Just another person that's died in a plane.
I mean, there was a big theme with especially the ships they designed for the Battle of the Binary Stars of naming them after Air Force pilots and test pilots.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else you want to say about your beloved Shran, Brandy?
Just that I feel like going and getting some acrylic paint and some really tiny paint brushes and adding some blue to my Shran.
You should buy yourself another one and do that. Like the little circle that goes around the top of the saucer section.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'll look
and
nice.
And maybe a little bit on the nacelles as well. You know, just accents.
Or you could just get, like, a sticker of Jeffrey Chrome's as Shran and then stick it on the underside of it, maybe.
Oh, just a big Shran face on the underside of the ship. I like
or
that.
Or kind of stylized, like how the, Second World War bombers would have the pet pinup girl painted on the side.
Shran the pinup girl?
The funny thing is I have these, sheets that are basically one big sticker, and you could print out anything on them from a printer, and it becomes something with a sticky surface. So now I'm just thinking,
You have to get a second Shran though to do that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Darn,
I can't get out of my head now. Shran with a pinup girl body.
Oh dear, sorry.
Yeah. And now I've given the listeners that thought too. You're welcome.
Oh, we ruined it for everyone.
Yeah. It's in our heads now. So now it's in all of yours.
Now it's headcanon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, so the Cardenas class.
The jock of the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Yeah, big, like, kind of four nacelle design. So this one was... also, there was one of them at the Battle of the Binary Stars called the USS Jaeger.
Mm.
But the main one we know from this one is that we never actually see the Prime Universe version of it, but we do get to see the Mirror Universe version because it's the Buran that was Lorca's ship. In both timelines, you have, like, Prime Lorca was captain of the USS Buran, and then Mirror Lorca was on the ISS Buran. This is actually probably my favorite design of all of the, like, Binary Stars ones.
I'd agree with you there.
It's just, like, again, it's, like, very clearly, like, a Starfleet ship. It's got the sort of, like, the saucer section, those sort of design elements. But it's got things moved around just a little bit. It's got, like, the bridge is, like, right up at the front of the saucer section. And it's got those cool little, like, dark gray accents on the side with the, like, name and registry in those. So it's, like, yeah, it's just, it's doing what I really liked with a lot of these designs is, like, taking what we know about, you know, the conventions of Star Trek, like, Starfleet ship design, and just, like, tweaking it a little bit.
Yeah. One of the things I really like about the Eagle Moss collection of starships, especially the Discovery line. I've never had anything but the Discovery starships because that was when I actually started having these collections. Although I do have an NX-01 Enterprise, but they each come with a booklet that shows the creation process from the design and to the actual finished model and what changes are made along the way and, you know, what designs they didn't use, etc. And so each one has its own little story. And you learn more about ship design and why they did what they did in each one of those issues that I think that they ought to just combine it into one big book, which they probably have done already with the Ships of Discovery book that I saw on Amazon. So never mind.
Yeah, to me, this is probably my favorite sort of looking design of all the Ships of Discovery as well because of those accents in grey and dark grey.
It's just cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose it's fitting for a character like Lorca to be on that kind of ship.
It's like a...
Absolutely.
It's like a muscle car with racing stripes or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Well, it's like I said, it's the jock ship.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm thinking of a ship full of jocks and nothing ever gets done because they're just like, do you lift, bro? Do you even lift? So just talking about their protein shakes. And anyway, sorry.
So the Cardenas class is named after Robert Cardenas, a Brigadier General fighting in both World War II and Vietnam. When I did these notes about 3 weeks ago, he was 99 and... I think by the time this goes out, he'd have just turned 100 if he hasn't passed away in the last 3 weeks. So, yeah, he should be a centenarian?
Centenarian?
Something. He should be 100 by the time this goes out.
Yeah.
So, again, it's another ship named after a World War II or an Air Force-y guy, which, as we already are aware, this is going to be pretty much every ship within the Discovery set.
Mm.
The Buran is named after the first Russian spacecraft in the Buran project, which was the Soviets...
it was their space shuttle. It was their equivalent of... It was the Soviet equivalent of the space shuttle, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very, very similar. And unfortunately, I don't think ever flew on a crewed mission. I think they had sent only sort of two missions that were kind of on remote control, and then the project was shelved. Mm. I believe there is one... that is still, like, extant, sitting abandoned in an old warehouse.
And then you've got the Jaeger, which is named after Chuck Yeager.
Chuck Yeager.
He's the first person to fly faster than the speed of sound in 1947.
Cool.
Okay, so the next ship on our list is the Shepherd class. Now, the Shepherd class featured two ships, the USS Kerala and the USS Gagarin. So, the USS Kerala is named after a state in southern India, which is notably where the space agency is for India. That one appeared in the Battle of the Binary Stars as well. And the USS Gagarin, obviously named after Yuri Gagarin, who was the first person to orbit Earth in 1961. Now, that one was actually destroyed in The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry in Season 1 by the Klingons when the Discovery went to aid that planet. Was that in the planet episode?
That was, it was in the, I'm pretty sure it was that episode. It was in the opening scene where you have that ship, you have the Gagarin flies in. They have a really nice shot of, like, the whole ship. They're under attack, and Discovery, like, jumps in and tries to save them and fails. Like, the Gagarin is destroyed anyway. And it really sets the tone for that episode of like, hitting home that, like, Starfleet is not doing very well in this war. And it sort of sets the impetus for, you know, obviously everything else that happens in that episode. So this is, the way I've described it is it looks like an upside-down USS Shenzhou. It was actually revealed, I think, in one of the early trailers. They had a few shots from the Battle of the Binary Stars, and you see this flying past, sort of blurred. And people are like, oh, is that the one that they've revealed already, just like upside down?
You know, it does.
It is. It's sort of similar. It's got the, you know, the saucer section with the bridge on top in the more traditional design with the kind of blended in underslung, like, engineering hull with the, like, deflector dish. Very much the angled dish like the Shenzhou has. And that's got the sort of swept nacelle pylons coming out of the rear at the top. So it is sort of similar to that design, but inverted.
Well, and, you know, if you look at it, it really looks like those nacelles are upside down.
Yeah.
Maybe that is how they decided. They're just like, well, let's flip this over. Ooh, okay, well, let's just go with this, but make the top look like the bottom.
I have the Eagle Moss model of the USS Shenzhou. So, yeah, in the accompanying booklet with that, they do have the notes and some of the concept art. And some of them are this design with the sort of nacelle swept up at the back instead of down. So it makes sense that they would have seen that concept artwork and thought, oh, well, we've gone with a different design, but we don't want to just throw this other design out because these look really good.
Exactly.
And a similar thing with, you know, some of the early designs for the Enterprise when they were making the original series. At least two of those ended up being slightly adapted and used in sort of background artwork. You had the Daedalus class, sort of the old one, which was had the spherical section instead of the saucer section. You see a model of it in, I think, Sisko's office in Deep Space Nine. And it sort of very implied that that was, you know, the earlier ship, sort of just after the period of Enterprise. And there was even, like, one design of those, like, early concepts for the Enterprise that had, like, a big sort of ring around it, sort of like a, I call it an annular warp drive instead of, like, nacelles.
Right.
With just, like, a long, like, it looked much more like a sort of modern-day concept of what a futuristic ship might look like. And that one as well has sort of been adapted and has sort of appeared in, like, artwork and stuff, just labeled as, like, the early Enterprise. I think it's, like, XCV something or other. So yeah, I think there is a bit of a history of, like, you have your concept art for, like, a hero ship or something, and you select what you want to use, but we'll still go back to some of the concept art and stuff that you had in the past and use that to adapt into other things for the background as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Don't waste it.
Do you know, I'm not really a fan of this Shepard class. Like, I'm looking at all the ships that we're going to be talking about, all the different classes, and I think this is probably my least favorite out of all of them.
I quite like it. It is one of the ones that most looks like what we're used to, I think.
And do you know what? That might be one of the reasons.
Yeah.
Like, subconsciously.
Yeah, because I like a lot of the other ones for being just a little bit different from what we've seen so far.
I mean, that's kind of why Voyager is one of my favorite ships of all of Star Trek, just because it's not got the whole round saucer section that we're used to from the Enterprises.
Yeah.
And it's got the whole nacelles that come upwards, whether that's part to do with that environmental concern that they had or not, I don't really know. But it just looks different. Whereas this Shepard class is like, yeah, it sort of just looks like a saucer with wings coming off the back of it. Yeah. I don't feel like it's the most inspired looking ship.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I quite like it. I think it's fine. I think it does look very sort of standard, but I like all of these. It is a good design. It for something that was just in the background of a couple of shots, I think there's a lot of design work that's gone into it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Shepard class is named after the first American in space, Alan Shepard, which was in 1961, and he walked on the moon in 1971. Now, I'm not going to lie, this is at the point where I was doing my research and I started getting annoyed, where it's like the first American, this American, this American's on here. And I was starting to get a little bit annoyed that it was, whilst there are some other bits, it's a lot of these things are named after the first American to do something, generally. So I was starting to get a little bit annoyed with that, but then it does sort of come back. Do you know what I mean with what I'm trying to say there?
No, I totally get it, but you have to understand that it is a show that was made in America.
Mm.
And if it's made in America, we're going to reference ourselves as much as humanly possible.
Yeah. So the next ship we're looking at is the Engel class, which was named after astronaut and test pilot Joe Engel, who also commanded space shuttle missions and also tested the X-15s. There are two ships that we see in this class. They are the Toplana Hearth, NCC 1004, which was at the Battle of the Binary Stars, and also the USS Earhart, which was at the Battle of the Binary Stars as well.
Yep.
Now, prizes for guessing what the Toplana Hearth is named after.
I mean, I know.
I'm going to say, I know it's Vulcan. I'm not looking at the list. Give me a second. Give me a second. I know the answer to this. I know. Important Vulcan ship. Was it First Contact?
Yep.
Really? Yes.
The Toplana Hearth is the name of the Vulcan ship that first made contact with humans.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Because I was thinking maybe it was the ship that T'Pol's ancestor crashed into in 50s Earth. So I had a few options that I could have gone with, but I'm just like, what's the most important one? Probably that. I was guessing.
So I really like this. Again, it's like with USS Shran. I like when we get in-universe references.
Yes.
Before we went live, we were talking a little bit about The Expanse, which is another sci-fi show that we all enjoy. That's something that they do in that as well. You've got a lot of the ships in that. The names escape me for the moment, but they're all just named after people, but they're not real people from our modern age. And it's just implied that these are people that became sort of famous and worthy of having a ship named after them in the sort of intervening 300 years between now and when the show is set. So I like when Star Trek does that as well. I would love to see a USS Georgiou or something like that turn up in Picard.
I would like to see a USS Spock turn up in Picard.
Yeah.
Oh, don't you think that'd be a little on the nose if it was a USS Spock?
No.
One of the, yeah. I mean, because there's USS Spock and USS Kirk in the Star Trek Online.
Yeah, so there.
Okay.
I just feel like there's no way that they wouldn't have named a ship after one of the most venerable Starfleet officers of all time. Just saying.
Yeah, I get that.
So, this Engel class, this is, and this is another, just a little talk about the design. It's another quite sort of compact, sort of industrial looking design, I would say. Like, it's very, it's very flat. It's got sort of a sort of thicker saucer section. It's almost reminiscent of the way the Defiant class looks, but it's got actual nacelles on the side instead of the little chunky side things. The weird squat chunky nacelles that the Defiant class has.
See, I kind of thought that this looked like a warehouse in space when you were talking about the Shepherd class. I'm looking. But I do like this class of ship, though.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like the type of ship that would end up being a hero ship or something like this. It's not got the sleek lines of the Enterprise or Discovery or anything like that. This is a working ship. It's it's the ship that just gets in there and gets stuff done.
Yeah.
It was kind of what I figured Travis from Enterprise would actually be good on it, because
Travis Mayweather.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of feels like his kind of ship. Maybe it's just because it, as I say, absolutely, it looks like a warehouse in space, and he's a boomer or whatever it was called.
Yes, it was Boomer. That's what they were called.
So obviously, the USS Earhart is named after Amelia Earhart, the first female to fly solo over the Atlantic, and she was also a best-selling aviation author. She went missing over the Pacific Ocean in 1937 while heading towards Papua New Guinea, and then subsequently found in the Delta Quadrant.
She was assimilated by the Borg? What?
No, well, she wait, probably what? Wasn't. No, she ended up with the 37s in the episode, the 37s, with those other random people.
Yeah.
Right. You have to remember, I haven't seen Voyager
that's
for
right.
a very long
when they
time.
Found,
so I
they
apologize.
Found that, like, it was like a Buick truck or something just floating in space.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, I have got to get on my Voyager rewatch.
Tom Paris, you suddenly have an interest in, like, antique, like, 20th century Earth things. What's this?
Well, at least they carried on Tom Paris's interest, something like they did with Chakotay. But yeah. Anything else you want to say about this Engel class?
I don't think there's that much to say about it. Like, it just featured sort of in the background in the Battle of the Binary Stars. So it was kind of just there for that. So I do like that, again, so much work went into the design, even though it was just probably on screen for barely a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Next on the list is the Hoover class.
Now, this one is a kind of like a cute ship, the Hoover class. Like, I mean,
it is adorable.
I'm not going to say that I actually remember all these ships from being in the Battle of the Binary Stars, and I'm actually very much relying on the pictures that you put in the Excel spreadsheet.
Agree.
This one is sort of like a little field mouse.
Oh my God, you're right.
Oh yes, it is. It's like the baby ship. I mean, it's like, you guys, I want to play, and they're like, no. No, you have to just stay and watch. It's too dangerous for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got the USS Edison, which you know is going to be named after Thomas Edison. You've got the USS Dana or Dana. I'm not quite sure what that one's named after, and I couldn't think of anything unless it was like the creator of the ship's long lost love or something like that. And then you've got the USS DeMilo, which didn't appear in the Battle of the Binary Stars, but according to Nick's wonderful spreadsheet, it was in the Escape Artist.
Oh yes, that's
yes,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the ship that that all of the like bounty hunters have brought Harry Mudd or to try and claim the bounty, and then realize that it's just one of the many
right.
Harry Mudd androids.
See, this one is kind of cute. It's got that interesting shape, nacelle. It's got that interesting shaped saucer section, almost like a teardrop in a way.
Yeah, it is like, it definitely has design aspects that are like reminiscent of the Miranda class, where it's kind of got the, like TOS kind of style saucer section that kind of extends a bit at the back, and it's got kind of almost like a step up, which looking at it, they kind of go in. I wonder if those are meant to be like shuttle bays or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I can see that. That could be like that.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a very, very cute, compact design. It's like, I don't know, it's like if the Cardenas class is a muscle car, this is like a
Ford Fiesta.
Like a Daihatsu Miura or something. This is your little like hatchback.
Now, this is a Nissan Versa, and I know because I had to drive a Nissan Versa for the last week while my car was in the shop, and it is the smallest car I have ever been in.
Now, do you know what car this is? It's a Reliant Robin.
Finally got one into space.
Nice.
Talk talk about indestructible.
Yeah.
All right, the next ship on our list is the Malachowski class. Now, this one I quite like as a naming thing. It's named after the first female Thunderbird pilot, Nicole Malachowski, which was, if I'm not mistaken, something to do with aerobatics.
Yes.
Kind of like what I figure the Red Arrows are in the UK, but it's the American version.
Yeah, the Thunderbirds, the Blue Angels, there's a lot of them.
So, yes, not
a lot of them, but
not the international rescue marionettes of Gerry Anderson.
No, not those.
That's what I want. No. I want a ship named the USS Thunderbird or the USS Virgil or
Virgil Tracy.
It's like a whole subclass of ships named after Thunderbirds.
Man, I want to rewatch Thunderbirds now. Like, I grew up watching and loving it pretty much concurrently at the times when I was watching Star Trek as well. So they're all kind of like linked in my mind of just like the stuff I would like go out and play when I was a kid. It would either be like Thunderbirds International Rescue or Star Trek.
I had a little outfit and I dressed up as Virgil.
So did I.
Oh!
One of my, like, I cannot remember what age it was, but one of my birthday parties, I did like a Thunderbirds party and my mum made me
Same.
A costume and got like crepe paper and made like the sash and made like colored sashes for all of my friends as well. It was so good.
Oh, that's we so
actually
cool.
made a cake that looked like Thunderbird 2.
Yes. We are the same person.
Oh dear.
This is the only list, I mean, sorry, this is the only ship on our list that's actually got a class named after a female. I mean, obviously there are ships named after some females, but it's the only class named after a female, which I'm...
The bias continues.
Yes. I was a little bit disappointed when I was going through these at that, as well as the other American thing, but this is the thing that probably got me a little bit more. But it was good to see that we do have one named after a female, and she's got quite a good story behind her when you read up about her. So the Malachowski class, we saw two ships. You got the USS Clark, which was in the Battle of the Binary Stars, which was named after Sir Arthur C. Clarke, which is a famous sci-fi writer. It was famous for doing the screenplay of 2001 Space Odyssey. The other one we've got on the Malachowski class is the USS Sioux, which obviously is named after the First Nations group Sioux.
Yeah.
I don't know much about American... Native American history. So if you want to fill in for this little bit, Brandy or Nick?
Well, I can tell you that the natives of the land, you know, they have no system of ownership and stuff. They were very communal. In Westerns, they are often portrayed as savages and murderers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one man's murderer is another man's freedom fighter.
Yeah.
Because basically a bunch of white people invaded this land and just started killing them off because they wanted the land.
Yeah.
And now the natives are relegated to reservations. And basically it's not a good situation. There's, you know, a lot of tribes have just flat out gone extinct.
Oh, wow.
And... very of the tribes that are remaining, there aren't a lot of them in the population. It's stomach churning, really. And we just act like, oh yeah, well, we're this great melting pot. We're America. We're built on freedom. Yeah, but you sure trampled a lot of it to get to this point. So
it sounds very similar to what we have here, doesn't it, Nick?
Yeah, very similar. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a very similar situation for sure, but
like that we have, you know, I mean, this is just one example here, this sort of ship that's just named after the Sioux people, and there's of course another one later on named after a particular First Nations leader. I would hope that, you know, by this time, you know, in the, you know, Star Trek future, that, you know, these names are done like thoughtfully and like truly to like try to honor the people that they're named after. You know, not like, you know, the American military at the moment just having various attack helicopters and stuff just named after certain tribes because they have this reputation as being like great warriors and that's all they think about.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. It's like you have like the Apache helicopter and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the thing is that they coexisted for thousands of years, probably, without any, you know, I mean, this land thrived. They knew the land. They knew how to work the land. They knew how to rotate crops. They knew the weather patterns. They knew all of these things. And when the white men came and took all of that away, the white men often suffered calamities that they were unprepared for because they didn't bother to learn any of these things about the land. So I've heard more than a few stories about people who, I like, for instance, there was a hurricane that hit an area of Florida back in the, I want to say the 1930s. I wish I could remember the exact name of the area.
Do you remember the name of the hurricane?
Not off the top of my head. I would have to look it up. I heard a podcast about it a few weeks ago. And there were Native people that were still in the area. And when there were reports that this tropical storm was moving towards the coast, which back in that time, weather reports are not like they are now.
Yeah.
Basically, the Natives were like, we're getting out of here. And they left.
Yeah.
But the white people, in their hubris, was like, shh. We'll be fine. No, it wiped towns off the map.
Mm-hmm.
It killed thousands of people. In fact, the actual number of people that it killed was not known because there were a lot of people from the Bahamas area that were former slaves. And they were not treated with the same respect as white people. So they were basically just thrown into pits and buried in mass graves no names or anything like that. Thousands of them. And so that is the hubris of white people. Is like, if you see the natives leaving, follow them because they've been here for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and they understand what's coming.
Mm.
Oy. Idiots. And so, yeah, it's like, if you see the natives leaving, why would you think that you're smarter than they are? And yeah. Like,
there's so much history of yeah, like you said, just this, you know, it's the hubris of, you know, the European colonials coming into certain areas. And yeah, there are the indigenous people who, in the case of where we live there for up to, if not more than 60,000 years. And they just sort of, you know, are ignored.
Yeah. It's bizarre. There's actually countless stories of these kind of natural disasters that either happened because of the settlers not knowing the land that they were on, or the hubris of settlers thinking, oh, no, we'll be fine. So, it's just crazy. Because, yeah, don't even get me started on the Dust Bowl. So... That was a story I didn't know beforehand.
Anyway, we're on the Malachowski class. Just briefly, what do you think of the design of the ship?
I quite like it. It's another one that, like, the very clear, like, design cues.
It's clean.
Like, yeah, it's taken from the Miranda class again, I think. It's got that same shaped saucer section, sort of the saucer, like, round at the front and then kind of squared off at the back. But it's kind of got more like wings with the nacelles coming out than like straight down underneath.
Yeah. It's I don't know how to describe it. It just, I like it. It is aesthetically pleasing to me.
Yeah. It's not the best, not the worst. It's stunningly average.
That's fair. It's there and it looks, yeah.
So next up, we have the USS Hiawatha, which appeared in season 2 of Discovery.
Yes.
Which was the one that we found Jet Reno on.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't got a named class.
I think in my headcanon, I've decided it's a Florey class, just named after Howard Florey, who was one of the Australian scientists who, one of the people who helped in the discovery of penicillin. Obviously, okay. Everyone credits Alexander Fleming with that, but Florey was sort of part of it as well. And there is a medical research institute here named after him. Yeah. So, yeah, that's just my headcanon. I want to see like some kind of medical ship named after him. Yeah. So it's the Hiawatha. is
yes.
Yeah.
So the Hiawatha is another First Nations reference. So it's the First Nations leader. Look, I'm not too fully aware of a lot of Native American things or people. So, mm-hmm. Brandy, do you have much to say about Hiawatha as a leader?
I don't know enough off the top of my head that I would feel comfortable saying things about him.
That's pretty much how I was feeling. I don't know too much to be comfortable, and I don't want to do a disservice.
I believe, because I think there is an extra history YouTube video about, or a series they do about Hiawatha, and of course their stuff is quite like stripped down. It's sort of like history made, you know, to be digestible to like anyone okay. who just wants to watch it. But I believe Hiawatha was kind of put together a group that was called the Iroquois Confederacy, which basically it was a sort of a federation of sorts between a number of different tribes in one area. I think it's saying that he was known as sort of a great leader. I think it was called like a great peacemaker. So it makes a lot of sense to have a Starfleet ship, and especially one that is sort of like a medical frigate, you know, not a warship, named after someone like this.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's really not a whole lot known about him.
And what is known is probably taken from, like, from, you know, European accounts.
Yeah, like, no, he doesn't even have a time or reason of death on record. So there's just not a whole lot known about him.
Insofar as the ship design is concerned, I looked at this and thought one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say what that thing is.
So fine. I see what you're saying.
I think it's the weirdest designed ship that is on the list.
It looks to me, honestly, this is going to sound funny, it kind of looks to me like a cruise ship in space.
Isn't that reserved for the Enterprise D?
It's a space boat.
It does. This is the space boat.
This is the space love boat. This is it.
That's just, it kind of is that shape of like an actual sailing vessel of our time, but with nacelles attached.
It makes me think a little bit of, because I used to play Star Trek Armada, the old PC game, and you know, had all your like Starfleet ships in that, you know, like Galaxy and Sovereign class and all that sort of stuff, but you'd need like support things in it as well, and your dilithium mining ship and construction ship looked a lot like this. They had that design where it was sort of like the front was kind of like the curve of a like saucer section, but then it was just sort of like boxy, like container ship sort of thing behind that. So that's sort of the visual I get from this. It makes sense as a like a non-combat ship, like a freighter or like a medical transport or something, looking like this.
Yeah,
it's just going to have a lot of internal volume in that big like central bit.
Well, I mean, on that point, it's good to see that we have some ships that aren't, or that don't look like they're designed for battle. They're designed for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
I've totally realized, but I've completely missed off a ship in my little notes.
Have you?
Yeah, I haven't got any information about the next class, the Hernandez class, which is the USS Somerville.
Well, this one, so from here on, we're basically in like not specifically canon territory, because that is every ship that has appeared in the show.
Okay.
The USS Somerville, which has apparently been named as Hernandez class, I think that like Hernandez class comes from Star Trek Online, where you can get this ship.
Mm-hmm.
This one appeared in the Star Trek Discovery annual comic, I think from last year.
Right.
Yeah, it's just in like a couple of cells in like the opening pages. Essentially, the Somerville is on a mission to try and recover some of the mycelium space fungus for Stamets' research. And a couple of, like, they send an away team of a couple of people to pick up these samples, and they are killed, I think, like, transporting back with the samples, like, the transporter goes wrong, and they're killed by that. And then, like, you have the sort of last little bit of the captain basically just being like, well, I hope it's worth it. And that's what, you know, if it were a TV episode or something like that, that would be sort of like the starting teaser before the opening credits, and that's it. That's all you see of this ship. I just included it because it's another fun, weird design, sort of like a...
Yeah.
Almost like a donut.
Yeah, it's got like a donut-y... It's like the kind of Discovery saucer with like the cutouts in the center of it. And then two like big, like round, like very like chunky looking nacelles on the side. Interestingly, it's the only one out of the ship that actually has like cylindrical nacelles. And I think that was actually a design decision for all of the ships in Discovery not to have like cylindrical engine nacelles to kind of separate them from the look of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is just, I just wanted to include it as one little extra bit, as with the next one that I have on as well.
Is the, I reckon if it's the Hernandez class, it's probably named after Captain Hernandez, isn't it?
Oh, Erica Hernandez, absolutely.
Yeah, I want to go with that. Yeah, I think it definitely would be.
Done deal.
I'm going to say that it is. So there you go, another class named after a lady, albeit a fictional one.
Two out of 13 or so, yeah.
Well... The Le Guin class is definitely a real life lady.
Unfortunately, that class name is from my headcanon. But
okay, that works for me.
we've had a ship named after Arthur C. Clarke, so let's have more sci-fi authors. And I thought that would actually work for this because the last ship that I have on the list here is the USS Dorothy Garrod.
Yes,
this one I wanted to include because it's in my favorite of the Discovery books. The Way to the Stars by Una McCormick. Shout out to Una McCormick because she's just a brilliant writer.
I read it in one evening. I could not put it down.
I listened to the audiobook. It's very good. So this one, so the Dorothy Garrod is, the way it's described is it's a science ship and it's not even like a kind of big frontline science ship. It's just sort of, it basically goes on like archaeological survey missions and stuff like that. Because this is a ship that Sylvia Tilly's father serves on, who is a archaeologist, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't spoil too much for the book because if you haven't read it, you should go and read it. But at a point in the book, you know, we end up on this ship. She has a wonderful captain as well, Yindi Holden, who, even though it's, you know, she is Indigenous Australian and is just awesome. You know, I think she's introduced.
Wait, what?
The captain of this ship.
Yeah.
This ship
in The Way to the Stars.
Yeah. Her name is Yindi Holden. She's Indigenous Australian.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. See, I haven't read Way to the Stars yet.
Yeah.
That is
really
awesome.
Dude, you gotta read it.
I'm a slow reader. I'm still on the Saru one.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's not like you have to read them in order.
Yeah. So I remember, I think it was actually the Literary Treks episode where they were talking about this book.
Take a drink.
Yep. Because I'm pretty sure it was that, because I think they actually interviewed Una McCormick about this book, and she mentioned that she really wanted to do that because I think she said that she works with someone who is Indigenous Australian, or of at least of that descent, and wanted to include a character like that. And I really love about this character, you know, she's the captain of the ship, but her sort of background and training is as an anthropologist who specializes in cultures with oral traditions, which makes perfect sense because that was the sort of storytelling tradition of Indigenous people of Australia is, you know, they don't have a written language, you know, stories are passed down orally. So yeah, I kind of wanted to include this ship in the list just to talk a little bit about that and about that character and how it's introduced in this story. And it is named after Dorothy Annie Elizabeth Garrod, who was an English archaeologist, and she was, a professor of archaeology at the University of Cambridge, which is where Una McCormick studied. So I believe there is even a Dorothy Garrod building there. So that's why she wanted to name this ship after her.
Yeah, she was also the first woman to hold a chair at Oxbridge as well.
Yes, that's correct. That was the other reason. And I decided in my own headcanon that I wanted to call this the Le Guin class because I want to name as many things as possible after Ursula K. Le Guin. And I know that Una McCormick is a fan of Ursula Le Guin, which makes perfect sense.
I think Una would appreciate that.
Guys, that's a lot of ships.
Yeah, we powered through those.
Holy ships.
Which of all of these holy ships was your favorite, Brandy? The Shran?
It's hard for me to pick favorites. You guys know that.
I know, but I'm putting you on the spot.
There's so many beautiful designs that I really can't choose one over all. It's just, that's the problem with favorites, is that it makes it seem like the others are less than, and they're not to me.
Okay, we'll let you off then. What about you, Nick?
I still think my favorite design is the Cardenas class, the USS Buran. That will be the next Eagle Moss model ship that I get. And if, like, Mobius or any of those other ones who actually do, like, the model kits that you build ever comes out with that, I'll buy that one in a heartbeat.
I agree with the Cardenas class being the best design. I do quite like the McGee class because it's nice and tidy.
Yeah, I like them all. I always like sort of a space battle scene in Star Trek because it gives the chance to show off a lot of different ships. You know, it was the same with Big Battle at the beginning of Star Trek First Contact, and like that's where we first see the Akira class, which is my favorite ship design in all of Star Trek. So yeah, it was, you know, cool that we got all of these and that they all look so different and, you know, they're all kind of very Starfleet, but, you know, with a few different designs, and a lot of them look kind of industrial and actually like something that is used and has a function.
So before we do our closing, we had an email.
We did have an email. Look at that. It's from Brandon Hausen. Hi, Brandon. And Brandon says this: I understand that some have compared Gabrielle Burnham's views on time to that of Soren from Star Trek Generations. Yes. But another character I think they can be compared to is Anorax from Voyager's Year of Hell arc.
Okay.
Quotable examples being, time is patient, so we must be patient with it. Past, present, and future, they exist as one, they breathe together. And beyond study and instrumentation, there is instinct. Not everyone has the ability to truly perceive time, its colors, its moods. And this last one, while Anorax talks to Chakotay, may be the most relatable to Burnham and Soren. When I tell you that time has moods, a disposition to be intuited, I'm not speaking metaphorically. Anger is one of its moods. Anger and the desire for retribution. Vengeance. Time itself has tried to punish me for my arrogance. It has kept me from my wife, denied me my future. Very interesting correlations, Brandon. Thank you.
I really like them. Being a Voyager boy myself, I totally agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, I was going to say, Liam, you're our Voyager expert, so...
I didn't go that far.
Well, out of the three of us, you're the Voyager expert.
Yeah, okay. No, I really like those comparisons, Brandon. When those episodes are airing, I was thinking about Anorax because Year of Hell is my favorite Voyager episode, and I would say probably a lot of people's favorite Voyager episode as well, just because of how interesting the use of time was in that particular episode, and also obviously the action scenes and Janeway blowing up Voyager. But I was thinking those two when those Discovery episodes were airing. So yeah, thank you for your email, Brandon.
Yes, thank you very much.
It's been fun talking about donut ships and warehouse ships today, but it isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey!
If I were writing Voyager right now, like reconceiving it, I would make each season like a different decade, like show the progression of time over 70 years.
See, we could have just done that with Kes as a character, though. I know I said it probably a million times in the last 5 episodes. Kes could have shown us what that would have been within the 7-year period. So, you know, we all know my opinions on Kes and how much I liked the character.
Earl Grey.
Okay, Amy, your ice pick.
What is that number?
Amy to the nth power pick.
I imagine it at the square root of -1.
-1, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
literary treks.
You know, there's all this backstory as you're starting to learn in the show about what happened between Nemesis and the Picard show. And so there was all this backstory. You couldn't really show it all in the show. You don't want to. The show's about what's going on in the present time of the show. But, you know, Star Trek, since its origin, has always had ancillary materials that flesh out these stories. So, and we knew that would be the case here.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
99% of the time, Star Trek tech makes sense. This does not to me.
Okay, Christy, like, Star Trek has asked me to believe some pretty ludicrous things. This takes the cake.
Okay.
I think so.
All right, we're on the same page.
This is completely...
More than going warp 10 turns you into lizard?
More than lizard babies.
Really?
More than Spot turning into a baby lizard. This, I'm just like, what are you trying to feed me here?
That's interesting, because I believe this a lot more than those other things.
But. Yeah. Brennan Baga's evolution theories are much more believable than this.
No, they're really not. But yeah.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get good podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV, or on the desktop iTunes app, to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review.
If you are not an Apple user, you know we've got you covered. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, like Brandon, you can choose the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the Edge, and that'll come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Nick, when you're not making up your own names for ships in your own headcanon, where can we find you on the internet?
Boy, do I do a lot of that. You can find me on the Babel Conference, where I hang around, and I am quite active, especially in the postcards threads after any time we get a new episode of anything to do with Star Trek. You can also find me on Twitter, at PunkZoologist, and on Instagram, at PunkRockZoologist. So, Brandy, when you are not putting pin-up Shran decals on your McGee class, where can people find you?
I really do want to do that now.
Someone needs to Photoshop this.
You can find me in the Babel Conference lurking as per usual. You can also find me on Twitter at Brandy112. Brandy's with an I, 12 is a number. I do a live show with my friend Bruce Gibson from Literary Treks, Take a Drink, called Live from the Edge, which will happen again when there are new episodes of Star Trek Discovery airing. And we've also been doing a live show about Star Trek Picard over on Dan Gunther's YouTube channel, Kurt Ratz Productions. If you don't understand what Kurt Ratz is, it's Star Trek spelled backwards, guys. Very simple. So go on over there, give him a subscribe, because Dan puts out the most positive, wonderful videos about Star Trek. I love Dan. And so Bruce and I have been doing a live Picard show on Friday nights after an episode of Picard airs. So, and then I do a podcast with my husband, Dave, called the Dark Corner Podcast, where we talk about whatever we feel like. In fact, the last episode that we did at the time of this recording was about Pankration, which is a Greek martial art that is very old. And you can find that at darkcornerpodcast.com. And another thing you can find at darkcornerpodcast.com is a new podcast that I'm doing all by my own self called Headcanon, where I talk about whatever I want as far as my nerddoms, and I go off on many tangents, leading to talking about childhood trauma in my first episode, as it related to some of the things that I love the most in my fandoms. So go on over there and you'll find it under, you'll actually find it on the front page under Headcanon. And it's soon to be on iTunes as soon as they approve it as well. So I think that's everything. Yeah.
So, Brandy.
What?
I think we need to rename this as, so, Brandy, where can we find you not on the internet?
There are many places you cannot find me on the internet. Many, many places. But yeah, those are the places that you can find me. And so it only goes to say now, Liam, where can people find you when you're not thinking dirty thoughts about the USS Hiawatha?
Thinking about dirty thoughts on other ships, I guess. You can find me in the Babel Conference, popping up from time to time. You can find me on Twitter at LS74656. And you can find me on To The Journey, Trek FM Star Trek Voyager show.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
And now we would like to thank everyone in our associate producers class, a class all their own. Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Paleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mailett, and Chris DiBuzio. We thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially for supporting The Edge.
Thank you for listening and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge of Federation Space. Now, the
Hiawatha.
That didn't come out quite how I needed it.